The following is a presentation of the High Spot Podcast. Making their way to the ring, talking about the world of professional wrestling, the team of Jeff Martin and the trendsetter, Brian Perga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
What is going on? You're listening to the People's Podcast. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew. I am Jeff Martin alongside my tag team partner, the trendsetter, Brian Berga. We are here on the unofficial WWE Podcast recapping AEW Dynamite Fight for the Fallen. You can listen to us on all our social media at High Spot Podcast. Good to be back with you for another week recapping the world of AEW. Trendsetter, how are you doing, my friend?
How am I doing, man? I have been excited for this. It seems like only yesterday we did this, and quite honestly, it really does feel like that, guys. I'm not joking. I am
back another week here on the
whatsoever.
Show.
Whatsoever. Yeah. Excited for episode number two, talking about Fight for the Fallen, and an event I've been looking forward to, believe it or not, because this card is getting built up from last week when we were talking about it. A lot of matches I was looking forward to, a lot of matches that were going to be, you could call them show stealers, but man, what a night for AEW. What a night. Fight for the Fallen.
Yeah, so we open up with the TNT Championship, Cody defending against Sonny Kiss. Of course, Sonny Kiss has made a lot of news with all the support that he's getting for this one. Of course, you know, there's going to be those haters online, those bullies that just don't understand Sonny Kiss. But you know what? He's a heck of a talent, heck of a wrestler. He gets his opportunity here. The big stage now, trendsetter, at Fight for the Fallen, he gets a shot against Cody. And you know what? Let's be honest, man. He, to me, really looked like he belonged.
Yes, it was a huge moment, a huge step for Sonny Kiss in terms of, you know, when you come to a new promotion, you have been known in the independent scene, you want to take that next step, you want to get to that next level, and stepping into the ring with a guy as seasoned as Cody, you know, it could be very intimidating for some people, but also they can use that as motivation to step it up. He was a different person. When Sonny was coming down the ring, usually he's happy, he's flamboyant. When he showed up in that match getting ready to face Cody, he was 100% serious, ready to go. Again, he did not disappoint. Ultimately did not come out with the outcome he wanted, but again, what a great match. But the interesting thing about this match, Jeff, in terms of, you know, you want to talk about ring psychology, all those things we can dive into, but what was so interesting was it really seemed that Cody wasn't necessarily thrown off by Sonny Kiss, but I just felt like Cody's mind was on something else. It seems like he was struggling. What was really peculiar is as we're watching it, they kept going, taking shots of Tully Blanchard staring at Cody. It makes me think, what is going on there? Leaves the door open in terms of, you know, we know the history between Arn and Tully. And could there be a possibility of Cody might not be as focused as he needs to be and Arn Anderson is not doing the job?
Well, I think that he really came into the match. I don't think he kind of took Sonny Kiss lightly, but I think that it was maybe a, you know, not having to hit the cylinders all at once, right? Maybe test Sonny Kiss out. This is really a big step in competition for Sonny Kiss. This is actually probably the biggest match in his career so far in AEW. He's been teaming up a lot with Janela, and he's been doing a lot of, like, AEW Dark. So he's kind of been, like, behind the scenes. Really, you've been wondering, you know, wow, you know, since they signed Sonny Kiss, were they going to really have a spot for him? And then, you know, they built him up slowly, and here's a huge opportunity for him. And I just think that Cody, and it happens sometimes, you know, you're a veteran in the ring, you know when to go, you know when to pull back a little bit. And I think Cody, yes, I think he took Sonny Kiss a little bit lightly. I think Arn had to, like, really, sometimes when you're an athlete, trendsetter, and you know you've got a so-called easy match, you're going to take it slow, and you're just not as motivated or not driven enough when you have to take on somebody like this. And it almost backfired on him, as Sonny Kiss really showed that, you know, he belonged in this matchup, and Cody eventually got his act together and defeated Sonny Kiss. And if you look back at it, he struggled a little bit, but so did Jericho against Orange Cassidy. He took him lightly, but at the end of the day, he got the victory. So Cody Rhodes moves on. I don't know what the whole Tully Blanchard thing is about, but obviously there's something down the road in the works. Maybe another match with Sean Spears, maybe another client for Tully Blanchard, but he definitely was paying close attention to that match and to Cody.
He definitely was, but you know what? I don't take the consideration what you were talking about in terms of him looking at Sonny Kiss lightly. I think more than not, the pressure I feel is getting to Cody right now. It really is.
Having to defend that title all the time?
Not only having to defend that title all the time, but all the stuff you just mentioned he does backstage, all the stuff he does in terms of timing out the show, making sure everything is going well, and then also going out there and performing to the best of his ability. Because right now, you know, we have the AEW title. It's been established really well by Chris Jericho, and now the champion is Jon Moxley, who will be defending it against Brian Cage later on the night. But now, with that secondary title that you and I had talked about so many times on the High Spot podcast and now talking about here on the unofficial WWE podcast for the recap show, it seems like right now Cody's putting a lot on his shoulders, and it seems like it's really weighing him down right now, because this is, for the first time I could say, probably not one of the best performances I've seen Cody in AEW.
Sometimes when you're not going to be as sharp as you want to be, I'm pretty sure you can...
But you just said he's a veteran. Veterans should know better.
Yeah, but like if... Look, I'm going to... You know,
when you got to turn this, it on, know, you got to turn it on, this, man.
And he did. Eventually, when he needed to get the win, he got the win. So, I mean, you could blame Jericho last week for not taking Orange Cassidy too seriously, but at the end, he did what a veteran does. Re-energizes, takes a step back, and realizes that puts his eye back on the prize, and realizes that was a victory he needed. And Cody did the same thing. Same thing happens to a veteran pitcher when he'll start out there, he'll toss and maybe hit around a little bit, but then he'll just regain that competitiveness. And hey, you know what? It happens sometimes. You know what I mean? They're not machines, they're not robots, and certainly Cody's due to have a bad day once in a while.
Obviously, the outcome didn't work out for Sonny, but you think he's going to be taken to the next level now after being in the ring with Cody?
Well, it opened up some eyes, so we'll see what happens with that. But again, though, it's something good because they're showcasing the wrestlers. They're showcasing the talent that they have on that roster, and it's good for Orange Cassidy. It was good for Darby Allin. It was good for Sonny Kiss, You hope it rubs off on other people. You saw the way the Jurassic Express, how they're being showcased, and there's talent there. So I think they're doing a good job. I think so far in this time that they've had AEW Dynamite, they've been about promoting the stars. So now when it comes to stars that are coming in that are established a little bit from other companies, that's where you maybe kind of have a little. It's a little head scratcher, but I understand what they're doing, and we'll get to that when we talk about Brian Cage and Jon Moxley. But Trendsetter also, FTR was in the building, and they took on the Lucha Bros, Phoenix, and Pentagon Jr. Surprising here that FTR was able to get the win here. Obviously, they're a top tag team, but it's kind of the momentum train has kind of seemed to slip away from Lucha Bros in the last few weeks, months or so.
You could see it that way. I just think right now they're really worrying about establishing FTR. I mean, we know what they were, the revival in WWE, and kind of really trying to, showcase their talents and showcase their persona, because at the same time, they're coming to a new organization, and I honestly thought what you were talking about before when you mentioned established talent, I thought you were referring to this team, but now you're talking about Brian Cage. I mean, right now, FTR really has to find a way of distinguishing themselves separately from what they were in WWE, to what their identity is going to be here. So I think, one could say, oh, wow, the Lucha Bros and I are losing here. They're being pushed to the side. I don't necessarily think that. I think right now what you need to do is when you have new talent coming in, you have to make sure that they are looked front and centered as a team that can compete, as a team that can actually defeat elite teams that have already been established in AEW. So ultimately, we've talked about wins and losses. They actually matter in AEW, but I think ultimately in the end, it just helps build up that tag team division right now, which seems to be the deepest I've seen in a really long time.
Yeah, and then of course, they get the victory because Phoenix loses his mask. It gets kind of ripped off of him, and then they roll him up for the victory. And then Butcher and the Blade, hi-ho the Mario, the Butcher and the Blade, which is always in my mind when I think of the Butcher and the Blade, and they're there with the keys to the car. The Young Bucks come up, sneak up from behind, and then they take the keys back, the car that belongs to FTR, and then all of a sudden they come in. You see, like, there's gonna be like this peace offering. Kenny Omega comes out with some beers, and all of a sudden, instead of chugging them all together, FTR decides to throw the beers, douse Kenny Omega, and that kind of set him off. And then he went on to try to attack them, but the Young Bucks kind of pulled them back. So a little bit of a change there, because you saw FTR and the Young Bucks get along. Obviously, FTR is angry at Kenny Omega and for spilling beer the week before. So, I mean, there is this, like, kind of love-loss relationship between right now going on between the Elite and FTR.
Yeah, not only that, though, but, karma's a you-know-what, right? And
yeah.
So exactly that's what happened to Kenny Omega. But what really seems to be interesting right now is that Kenny really seems to be finding himself to be the odd man. And now a lot of people would say, hey, it's Hangman right now because he's always at the bar. He's really not kind of distinguishing himself with being with the Elite. And Kenny really seems to be the one now that's kind of being the odd man out, because right now, like you said, FTR and the Young Bucks are getting along, And Kenny seems to be the one that's been, you know, being disruptive. And
yeah,
being
Kenny chased the hug today, I think. Kenny chased the hug, and then he ended up getting doused with beer.
Yeah, and that's what ended up happening right now. And we're seeing a different side right now where it seems like, you know, Kenny doesn't seem to be all right there. Maybe something's on his mind, or maybe something's going on right now storyline-wise. But pretty interesting, because he always seemed to be the focal point, the centering, the calmness around the Elite the entire time.
That is very true. Then they promoted Le Champion next. He had to get some stuff off his mind, basically saying, and what an amazing jacket that was, that $7,000 white jacket that he had on, came out with Jack Hagar and Santana and Ortiz, and basically said that as much as everybody wants to see the rematch between Orange Cassidy, it ain't gonna happen. He's not gonna do it, and basically boasting that he basically helped win the ratings war last week. Depends on how you see it, Trendsetter, whether you go by demographic or you go by overall ratings. NXT won the overall rating. AEW won the 18 to 49 demographic. It depends on who you talk to. What's more important? I remember we were trained, Trendsetter, that it was all about the ratings, because we always saw the 3.1 against the 6s, and we saw the 4.0s against the, you know, the 6.5s and stuff like that. So we were always trained to look at the overall rating. But then I would say somewhere in between during the Attitude Era, people really going after that 18 to 49 demo. So before we talk about, you know, Chris Jericho saying that he'll never fight Orange Cassidy again, and also coming up with that great Demo God nickname, another nickname for the Le Champion, how do you picture, how do you define ratings a win? Do you picture it as the overall win, or do you picture it by the demographic?
Well, you know, I think you kind of really just answered the question for me before you just threw it to me. But, yeah, you would have to look at, for me, being the old school guy that I am, and I can say that because I have a lot of whites in my hair now. I'm getting up there, Jeff, in age.
A lot of grays.
Yes, exactly. You too. It's like looking into a mirror, basically. Why don't you turn around? Yeah, it really feels like the all-round rating seems to matter a lot right now. But, you know, going back to what you mentioned before, the Attitude Era, Jeff, you know, it's a lot different now compared to how we used to watch wrestling when we flip back and forth during the Monday Night Wars between WCW and WWE. Now it's like, okay, now it's the Wednesday Night Wars between AEW and NXT. But in reality, it's not really a war, because you just mentioned before, and Jericho mentioned it during his promo, it's about the demographic. The target audience in which what WWE targets is not the same as AEW. AEW is targeting a smaller, yet maybe more loyal fan base.
No, that 18 to 49 is the key one.
Is the key one.
18 to 49 is the big one. So does okay. WWE now. They're after that 18 to 49, yeah.
Okay, but yeah. For the longest time, they haven't been that way. They've been more the PG kid-friendly type of show. So maybe they're converting to that. So ultimately, if we were going to stick to that particular demographic, then yes, AEW came out on top. But let's be honest, Jeff, it's not really a war here, because it's apples and oranges, basically. You have a company that's been well-established. It's the juggernaut. It's the machine. I'm not talking about Brian Cage. I'm talking about the WWE. And you have AEW, who's trying to formulate their identity. They're trying to focus on themselves. It's nice to see jabs being thrown back and forth, I'm not going to lie. But ultimately, at the end, you know, unlike the times when you'd use your VHS and use your VCR, yes, guys, look it up, Google it, you'll know what it means. Now you can just DVR stuff. You don't have to see it live. So I think that debate in terms of whether you're watching something live or not kind of fluctuates, because not a lot of people nowadays are watching things live anymore.
And you know what, guys? We'll pose this question on our Twitter. What do you watch more? What is your go-to show? Go on, you know, we'll put that question up.
It's the High Spot Podcast,
on the High Spot Podcast. Well,
that's their go-to show.
On Wednesday night, what do you go and watch? Are you AEW or are you WWE NXT? What is your go-to show at 8 p.m.? When the clock strikes 8 on Wednesday night, what do you go for? Do you go for AEW or do you go for NXT? So we'll put that post this morning, and we'll see what you fans got to say. So just go to High Spot Podcast, follow us there, the Jersey Wrecking Crew, and you know, we want to hear from you guys. Maybe next week we will read the polls and the votes by you, the fans. So yeah, definitely let's do that. Let's be interactive. Let's talk to the people, because this is the people's podcast, and let's see what you guys say. Do you watch AEW or NXT? And we'll find out next week, and we'll let you guys know what the current state is of viewership for these shows.
Well, talk about reminiscing though, Jeff. I must say, you know, going back to the old days where Stone Cold Steve Austin would attack the authority and the beer truck and beer all over the place. Mm-hmm. It really feels nowadays, I mean, you can call it nostalgia all you want. Kind of funny that Orange Cassidy comes out, gives a very somber thumbs up, and orange juice just spills all over the inner circle.
See it coming a mile away.
See it coming a mile a minute. It's like, okay, I've seen this before. And this is what, you know, if you're an AEW fan,
you know.
But if you're an AEW fan, it kind of concerns me. You know why? Because a lot of this stuff is, they've said it time and time again that they want to separate themselves. They're not going to be like WWE. They're going to create their own storylines, their own identities. But a lot of these things seem to be recycled from WWE storylines.
Don't you think they just have to go there, though? I mean, the whole orange juice gag that it's been like being teased, that they've gotten the best of Orange Cassidy the last few weeks.
Did they have to go there? I don't think they had to.
I mean, it just seemed like it just
I mean,
was
yet you had Ortiz,
set up
you had
perfectly.
Ortiz and Santana like swimming in the orange juice, like, okay, like doing your own impersonation of Vince McMahon. Could that be a jab? Could that be just like an inner circle
homage.
Joke?
Say an homage.
An homage. Okay, okay. But the thing is, when the homage gets repeated over, we have the milk truck, we have this, we have scenarios similar to this. It's just like, come on, guys, can we do something? Jeff, it's the same feeling when you watch a movie, right, and like it's being remade. I'm like, come on, this movie's already been done, and we're remaking it again. What's 10, 15 years old? Really? Yeah. We're going to do that again, and hopefully lightning strikes in a bottle twice? That's my biggest thing. You cannot strike lightning in the same place twice, and I think they went for it there. That kind of soured the whole experience for me.
And Jericho goes on commentary afterwards, and he's just, you know, just being Jericho. And
being a goof.
I love the Demo God nickname. He's got so many nicknames, man. It just works, too. So, obviously, Jericho believes at the end of the day that it's the 18 to 49 demographic that's the key, not the overall rating. So, it also depends on you guys. What do you guys view as the most important target? If they're hitting 18 to 49, and that's what they've sold TNT, that's what they're going to get, then they've obviously won, and they are the winners of the Wednesday night I don't know if it's a war. I want to maybe call it a street fight or something like that, because a war, to me, is the Monday Night Wars. You know what I mean? That is when you just have all hands on deck, and you're just going head-to-head, and it's just like, you know, leave no bodies behind. You know what I mean? It is just like a crazy, crazy thing. So, so whichever way you see it, whichever way you take victories, if you're on the AEW side, you're going to go with the demographic. If you're an NXT person and you want to capture the win, yeah, you're going to go with the overall rating. So Jericho then stayed for commentary, but before that, he wiped himself off with an Orange Cassidy towel. Now, I might really be tempted to buy that towel. I don't know why, but it just kind of freaking looks cool.
Man, talk about product placement, Jeff. You're already you're just basically saying, my money.
It looks cool.
Just
for
take
some
my money.
Let me
AEW.
Let me tell you something though. Pro wrestling tees and AEW have taken my money. Let's just say that
they haven't. You kind of give it away too, man. You know, honestly.
Huh?
Come on. There are a couple of buys there we'd have to question, but you know what? Hey,
yeah,
each their own, man.
It's at the time. You know what I mean? I'm just feeling like I gotta get this shirt, and well, you know. And then, of course, after that, we had the Elite against the Jurassic Express.
Oh,
my Kenny
goodness.
Omega and the Young Bucks against Marco Stunt.
My goodness, Jeff. What a match this was.
I mean, this was, you know, Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus. This is good.
This was good.
I mean,
but you know what? A lot of the old school timers will probably be like, this was garbage.
Oh, yeah. They'll be like, oh, my God. But the amazing part. I want to say something, the pied de resistance.
Ooh, very nice.
Was that Canadian
destroyer?
Destroyer that happened, man. It was just crazy, man. It was risky. I don't know if I would have ever let myself, you know, if I would have let that happen. But wow, what a move! What a maneuver!
Well, when you look at the Young Bucks in general, just tag team wrestling, right? And again, I'm isolating just one particular team. There are a lot of great teams right now in AEW. But when you look at them, they've done their entire career revolutionizing what tag team wrestling is supposed to be. People want to talk about the ring psychology of tag team wrestling, you know, how you get heat, how you do the comeback, and things of that nature. And that's obviously inside lingo, guys. But, you know, when terms of having spots mean something – granted, a lot of people could say, how could you do a Canadian Destroyer and then continue the match? Mm-hmm. I get it, guys, but when you're being compared to everything else, and I just mentioned it before when you did the whole Orange Cassidy scenario with Juice falling on the inner circle, you know, this is a scenario where they're trying to change what tag team wrestling is ultimately known for.
Yeah.
The tag team wrestling that Vince McMahon and WWE doesn't want to do anymore and doesn't want to give any credit to. And they're trying to revolutionize that particular field, which is, in my opinion, carrying the company right now. Yes, you have Jon Moxley. Yes, you have Cody as the champion. Yes, you have Shida as the women's champion. Yes, you have tag team champions in Kenny and Hangman Page. But the tag team division is sustaining it. We talked about WCW in the past, how the Cruiserweights was the backbone of that organization. Here, the tag team champions and wrestling are the backbone of AEW, in my opinion. So it's a great way to showcase what tag team wrestling is now in 2020 compared to what it was back in the 90s. And ultimately, what I loved more about this, not only the outcome, the Elite win, but my goodness, I am getting excited to what could possibly be happening now with Kenny Omega. And, yeah. and I'll leave this note, and I want to get your input on this too. Ever since he came to AEW, Jeff, I've been waiting to see Kenny Omega.
Yeah,
and not the Kenny Omega New Japan where he was the IW champion. He had that good feel-good story where he'd find defeated Okada and became the champion and was revered because he was accepted by the Japanese culture and the people there. I'm talking about the cleaner. Now, I don't want the cleaner from New Japan Pro Wrestling. I want the evolution of what that's going to be, because that type of Kenny Omega, who is sick and sinister and would do everything he could to win and be the best, I have not seen that guy since that time. And I'm hoping these are the small little seedlings that – Kenny Omega can evolve into the new character, the new persona, the person he's supposed to be the day he signed his signature and the ink dried on that contract.
Yeah, I mean, what I liked about this match is that he actually showed a little bit of emotion, a little bit of that craziness with the cleaner in New Japan. You kind of had those vibes, but this match told a lot of stories. One of them was Kenny Omega's character, because it's not known that he, you know, loses his cool and just goes and attacks Marco Stunt, especially after he got the pin on Marco Stunt. He goes after him. He has to get pulled apart.
He mocked him a little bit during the match.
Yeah,
as well.
the young man he wrestled. No, they made a great point. Jericho made a great point that if he doesn't take you seriously, he will wrestle with his shirt on.
Mm-hmm.
Which you know, that's Jericho's way of saying, hey, you know, this is like
that Winnipeg lingo between Jericho
and
Kenny Omega.
So
I guess
it's very unlike Kenny to fight with the shirt on. Obviously, when you're taking on Marco Stunt, you know, depend, you know, like, give Marco Stunt his props. He's there. He signed as a wrestler, right? So you got to take him seriously. And Kenny Omega did not. And it's not like Kenny, the Kenny that we do know now, ever since he joined AEW, to do something like that, mock his competitor. So
being disrespectful.
Disrespectful,
in a way.
Right? And, you know, that was surprising. And then also, too, FTR having drinks in the back with, you know, Hangman Adam Page was something different, too. Like, what's going on there? Are they trying to get to Kenny? Are they trying to get, you know, are they trying to, you know, split those two? Because, you know what? At the end, those guys are going for what they have, and that's those tag team championships. So that's another way that they're planting the seed, maybe trying to split them up. But you know what? That Kenny Omega tease, and the fact that they had Jericho there to kind of emphasize it a little bit too, where actually see Jericho was rooting for Kenny to beat Marco up some more. I mean, those little things that they touched on that maybe you didn't see, that maybe you know, you guys were like, oh wow, I didn't even realize that. Yeah, you're right, that makes sense. Those little things, that those Jericho interjections there, the Kenny Omega pointing out that he wrestled with his shirt on and kind of was disrespecting his competitors, the fact that he attacked Marco Stunt, the fact that, you know, the Kenny Omega's facial features, I haven't seen those in a long, long time.
I know, and
I'm getting
why.
Goosebumps, because that's the Kenny Omega that I would like have goosebumps watching when I would go see him at, you know, Supercard of Honor in New Orleans, when you would hear the myth of Kenny Omega when he was in New Japan, and we were here in the United States saying, oh, you know, this Kenny Omega, I got to see him putting up those 5-star matches against Okada, that guy in New Japan who was the leader of the Bullet Club, and before he attacked AJ Styles, that craziness, that cleaner, right? So
I think I could sum
I got
up
excited.
In one,
I got goosebumps.
Jeff, I think I could sum up in one word, that unpredictability factor that Kenny had so much that he had lost.
And that's what we love. We love unpredictability, man. Yeah. It's like,
and you said very
it's
well.
It's not hard to do.
You said very well, with the psychological warfare that the FTR is trying to do right now in terms of drinking with Hangman Page and who knows what's going on, the psychological battle that's going in the mind of Kenny Omega makes it even more intriguing to me what's going to happen down the road. Now, they tease the fact when there's a scenario where Adam was going to do the lariat clothesline on Kenny, but now it looks like Kenny seems to be the one that's a little bit unstable. So love how they're planting those seeds. Love how they're kind of giving you those side little jabs in terms of, oh, this could happen or that could happen. I haven't seen that in a long time. I haven't seen that in a while. So I'm really happy to see not only the unpredictability of Kenny, but the unpredictability of what could happen between not only Kenny, not only Adam, not only FTR, but within the Elite as well.
Yeah, and obviously Kenny Omega too is let's be honest, he's head of the women's division, and right now it's really facing some criticism because right now there's an injured roster, it's kind of depleted, and you got Sheeta back there with Alex Marvez, and basically saying how she's willing to take on all comers for this. If you think you can do it, if you think you're strong and you can take on Sheeta, then you know what, she's going to give you the opportunity. And also to that, Nyla Rose might cash that in. Her number one contendership sooner than later, because just that roster is depleted. So while you know you're praising Kenny Omega and the way he's going character wise behind the scenes, you know, I think it's fair to criticize a little bit of the depth on the women's roster or lack thereof. So now you have a point where we're going to see Sheeta defend the title against maybe somebody that's not ready, or maybe somebody that's not even in AEW right now who feels that they have a great opportunity to take that women's championship from Sheeta.
Yeah, and it's fair to say that criticism is fair, because right now, you know, you look at Kenny and what he's done in terms of developing characters, developing his own persona, can't say he's carrying that over into the women's division. Now, people will probably say, well, the women's division, it's still very light, or it's still, you know, people who you don't know very well. There's enough talent there where you can develop storylines, and this is something I've talked about before on the High Spot podcast with you, Jeff, or I've talked about during the SmackDown recap. It's one thing to go for the title, but the main skill, in my opinion, when it comes to developing any type of roster, whether you're talking about the men's, the women's, the cruiserweights, the tag teams, whatever division you want to call it, you have to develop storylines and have people interested in things outside the championship. Once you start doing that and can develop intriguing, compelling TV that way, that's when that division, or whatever the case might be, in this case the women's division, will be successful.
Yeah, and then we see Moxley there kind of foreshadow something that he might do in the match against Brian Cage.
Got
and
a
that
haircut.
Is definitely, I know.
He did.
Yeah.
He wasn't going for the Dean Ambrose look anymore. He was going back to John Moxley, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He was a little bit there.
After the pandemic, he can now finally get a haircut, basically.
Hey, barbershops are open. So, yeah, with John Moxley.
But the gyms aren't, damn it.
Well, at least here. John Moxley teased that he would rip off the surgically repaired biceps from Brian Cage, and maybe foreshadow who was to come. So good to see John Moxley back. Really excited for that match, John Moxley and Brian Cage. We were talking before whether we thought Brian Cage was a big time player. So we'll get our thoughts on that when we talk about the match too. Mm-hmm. But we're just gonna plant the seed there. Do you think that Brian Cage has that it factor? So then we go. Back to a tag team, women's tag team matchup, and that is the team of the Nightmare Sisters with Dustin Rhodes. You know what? Allie's there, and Brandy, they're a tag team. Now, they have a winning streak.
They're undefeated.
They're undefeated, and they've got most of their matches on AEW Dark. So this was their AEW Dynamite Fight for the Fallen debut. And they come out with a victory in the match. And, you know.
Not just a victory, Jeff, but a pretty dominant victory as well. They
pretty
seem to
dominant,
work well.
Too.
I have to give a lot of credit to Brandi Rhodes. I'm sure a lot of people have butchered her in terms of her in-ring skill. I'm not going to say she's 100% there just yet because, again, it just takes more time in the ring. And
yeah.
I'll give her credit that she wants to get in the ring and showcase that when she really doesn't have to, but she wants to. Worked really well with Allie. Granted, you know, everybody in the ring helped each other out, but I have to give a lot of credit. Brandy has done a very good job of using the skills that she has and really taking it to the next level.
And let's just say that the trendsetter is very, very tough on compliments. He doesn't throw them out like anything. You know, I mean, he's very selective on the compliments that he throws. And for him to give one to Brandy Rhodes is very, like, you know, wow. I'm like, wow, I'm here a little blown away there that you would. Yes, she's improved.
The effort is there.
The effort
and now
is
the
there.
Talent's coming along with it.
But you wonder, though, they're undefeated, but there's no women's tag team titles, though. You know what I mean? So, like, they're a tag team, and Dustin, of course, is managing them, and it's good to see Dustin there. But it just, I don't know, there's no women's tag team championship. So unless they're, like, doing this, build momentum for them to go in singles and go for the AEW championship. But I don't know. I don't think introducing a women's tag team title right now is something that's high on top of priority for AEW right now.
I agree with you, but I think right now what they're trying to build is the fact that this scenario, I mean, this merge between Allie and Brandy isn't necessarily, you know, an even mix. You know, it isn't like you're mixing, sugar with coffee and you're just mixing it up together. That's a bad analogy, I know, but that's the best one I could think of, guys. I'm sorry, I'm really tired right now. But, you know, it's not an even pairing right now. So I think right now what you're trying to see is, you know, them teaming up, but eventually the split. And so I think that's why they're showcasing
already,
the tag
right?
team.
It's crazy. Already they're thinking of the split, right?
Yeah, but here's the thing, you know, I think that's the initial idea. But if Brandi and Allie have become popular enough where people actually like them in the ring and they become very well in terms of having good chemistry and dialogue and dynamic, this could go on a little bit longer. So it wouldn't have to be the immediate tag team pairing up and then all of a sudden backstabbing and turn your back on it. This could go on for a little bit longer, which I like because most of the times, like you say, storylines like this establish themselves and quickly dissipate. And then you're like, okay, well, what was the payoff of that? Here, I think it's for the slow build.
And it's obviously Brandy's the face here because she's pushing the tag team to work together, and Allie's kind of like not having it, so she's a little standoffish, whatever like that. So it looks like Allie is playing the heel in this and trying to get along with Brandi, so she's obviously the face here. So, again, good match and defeated Kenzie Page and MJ Jenkins. Dude, you know how I mentioned before that AEW really takes my money? Well, if you take a look at the commercial afterwards about the Unrivaled collection here, man, dude, like, I want all those action figures, dude.
What are
the
you,
Unrivaled
12
collection
years old?
Come
on,
comes
man.
Out this
Seriously?
August. Hey, my birthday is coming up, dude. And if you want to be nice, I'll have a Lea Champion action figure under my tree.
In your tree? You have a Christmas tree on your birthday?
Because my birthday is Christmas, man. Okay. My birthday is Christmas, damn it.
Yeah, it only comes once a year, thank God, and when it's over.
And especially, I should get brownie points because this pandemic, having, you know, to put up with you for so long. I should get.
How about I should get brand points for how you ruined my birthday?
I'm glad that you got the under the tree part though. I thought that was a little funny and a funny great added touch there. But yeah,
Jeff's
man,
the only guy that sings Christmas carols during the summertime.
Oh, Christmas in July, by the way, if you're a Hallmark fan too, and definitely.
But again, talking about nostalgia too, they did it kind of like the old school WWE action figures.
Yeah,
like, I'm calling.
Yeah.
Look at them go! Mm-hmm. The re-trigger and all stuff like that. Action figures look amazing. I'm sure those are going to sell ridiculously well. And again, like I said, just small little insights in terms, you know, we've heard rumors too. I think Kenny Omega was interviewed, didn't see the whole article, but basically the synopsis was that eventually, closely down the road, they're going to come out with an AEW video game as well.
Yeah,
so it's like,
that's
progression. If you want to talk about progression from a company standpoint, not only just selling merchandise,
just
action figures,
just be a little bit better. Just be a little bit better than the 2K WWE stuff, and you'll be all right because those have been absolutely hot garbage.
They've been
just tremendous. If you're just a little bit better than those, you've hit a home run too. And so yeah, man. And I want to give credit to one of our listeners. And you know what? You always wonder, you know, who's listening to the show? Well, obviously, we have a huge fan of the SmackDown review show that we do.
And
he's also listening to the AEW one. And we're going to send a shout out to DJ Kuzmo because he's been very interactive with us. And we appreciate that, guys. At the end of the day, we want to hear from you. If you're listening to the Unofficial WWE Podcast and you're really liking what we're doing with the AEW recap shows and what we're doing with SmackDown review, we definitely want to hear from you guys. Go there, Apple Podcast, leave a rating and say, hey, you really like what we're doing? Hey, if you really want to crap on us too and say, hey, we're doing a horrible job, who are these two clowns? Fine, we'll take criticism as well because, hey, you know what? No, you know,
that's the name of the game.
It'll roll right off our backs too. And if we can improve, we'll improve. And if not, we'll give you the middle finger. But we want to hear from you, the fans. So what you can do is go follow us on High Spot Podcast at High Spot Podcast on all our social media on Instagram and Twitter. Download the show too. If you don't want to see us on YouTube, you can go download the episode on Apple Podcast or whatever podcast platform you want to and interact with the Jersey Wrecking Crew. We want to hear from you, and DJ Kuzma has done a great job interacting. We always get back to him. But last week, you told me who would be Nyla Rose's manager.
Yeah, we're talking about it, and nothing really came up at the top of our head.
We're like, who?
Let's not do that. Yeah. It's AEW. Okay.
But who could it be? And I'm like racking my brain, and I even told you, Trendsetter, I was like, I'll have to do my research and I'll let you know. And then all of a sudden, because DJ Kuzma heard the show, he goes, how about Vicky Guerrero? And I'm like, good God, that's the answer.
bing, 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 you win the prize. Check the mail because you're going to get two life-size action figures of the Jersey Wrecking Crew. No, I'm joking. We wish. But no, but great job, DJ Kuzma. We're going to send you a shout-out because you were really thinking about this one. And a great job, man. Vicky Guerrero is Nyla Rose's new manager. And of course, they promised to take the women's division by storm. Yada, yada, yada. Hooray, hooray. And there you go. Vicky Guerrero is the new manager, Trendsetter.
Yes, well, again, it seemed like the answer was playing right in front of our faces, and we missed it. So, shout out to you, buddy. You knew it better than we did. You should be doing the show, not us for AEW.
Yeah, you should definitely replace Greg on the show. Really, definitely should replace Greg.
Oh, Greg, yeah.
Listen, I'm going to say this, and first and foremost, let me add that I respect the heck out of Vicky Guerrero. I really do, but here's where you kind of lose me, because you left WWE. Right? You left WWE because you wanted to go off and finish off school, and that's great. I don't blame you for it. You've been there long enough. You did a great job where no one thought that you could even play a role like you did, and you took the Vicky Guerrero character, and you made her one of the most memorable characters in SmackDown history, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you left on your own accord, and they sent you off, and you know, you spent a long time there, and they did everything possible for you when Eddie Guerrero passed away. But then you start your podcast like everyone does. It seems like everybody has a podcast now. And then you had WWE characters on there. But when you go to show up on AEW TV, when you know there's a war going on, when you know that doing something like that is going to cause you disfavor with the company WWE, yes, is it petty? Of course. But when you go out there playing the victim and saying that, oh, WWE shut down me having their guest, when you've shown that you're going to go AEW and you're going to, you know, not pledge allegiance, but show your support, and then all of a sudden now, you know, you're like, I don't have guests coming on my show, so it's only, you know, Impact people, AEW people, that's fine, but you kind of make it known that AEW's kind of shut you out, and then you sign with AEW, then I don't want to hear that WWE is unfair to you. You know what I mean? You chose to leave. They didn't fire you or endeavor you. They, you know, you decided to leave on your accord. And then when something like this happens, don't be surprised when WWE shuts you out. That's all I'm saying there. And I will close it with, I have tremendous respect for her, and she's going to be amazing as a manager for Nyla Rose.
Well, yeah, I mean, everything you just said, there's no point in continuing because you basically made the valid point there. But in terms of what she's going to do for Nyla Rose is basically be that mouthpiece, be that supposed whatever I feel like is doing right now and trying to be that Paul Heyman to that Brock Lesnar type of character. So I think Vicky would do an amazing job of that. She'll be a great mouthpiece. But ultimately, at the end, I feel that with Nyla Rose, she's got to bring up her game. It's not going to be Vicky doing everything for you. You have to deliver. Now that Vicky's going to take care of the talk aspect, which, in all fairness, Nyla has been struggling, severely been struggling, in my opinion, in terms of getting that message across.
You want to hear less from her. You just want to see more in the ring. You want her
yes,
to make your
but
statement.
To that extent, yeah. More in the ring sometimes isn't always a good thing right now because, you know, less is more in the ring as well, too. So if you're going to be a powerhouse, be that powerhouse, because right now, her last couple matches, even the ones with Sheeta, I can't say are any ones that I would brag about or talk about in a high class or high validity behind it. So Nyla's really got to pick it up. If she's going to have her mouthpiece, which is Vicky Guerrero now, get the message across to all the women in the women division, and especially to the audience of AEW to be intrigued and invested in it, then Nyla, you have to deliver in the ring.
But obviously, this could be a huge step for Nyla, because this puts her on another level, and once she becomes the women's champion, which I believe she will be, she's going to be unstoppable for a while. I mean, she's going to be unstoppable for a while because Vicky Guerrero is going to do everything she can.
Well, that's the foreshadowing, isn't it?
That's what I'm for. Yeah, exactly. And then we finally get to the main event. We have the AEW Championship on the line. Jon Moxley makes his return against Brian Cage with Taz, the FTW champion, versus the AEW World Heavyweight Champion. And, wow, it started off crazy outside the ring, and obviously it was a hard-hitting matchup. But then at the end of the day, Trendsetter, we're going to decide whether it was the right thing for Taz to throw in the towel, because like Jonny Moxley said in his promo, he foreshadowed it, he went for that biceps, man, and he had that arm bar, and he was holding on to it. Now, if you're Taz, and that's your moneymaker right there, do you throw in the towel? Was it right to throw in the towel and live another day, or should have Brian Cage try to find a way out of that arm bar and maybe pull out a victory over Jon Moxley? You never know. We'll never know because Taz threw in the towel.
Well, before we go into the whole Taz throwing the towel type of thing, I must say that this was something that I was looking forward to. And I have to say, in all honesty, I was not very happy with the match in general. Because, again, we know what Jon Moxley is. We know how tough. He's gritty. We love to use the word grit nowadays, right?
I've got grit.
Yeah, grit, damn it. But the thing about you're bringing somebody like Brian Cage, we had the feeling he wasn't going to win the AEW Championship. It was either going to be a continued storyline or a scenario that happened later on in the match, after the match is over, which we'll talk about in a few. But you didn't think that he was going to walk away with the championship. But what you wanted to get out of it was an impressive performance by Brian Cage. Now, I think he did an okay performance. He did things very well. But I would have preferred, if you're going to build this guy in, I know we're always comparing WWE guys, I get it, but if you're going to pair him to like a dominant force like a Brock Lesnar, you have to have that dominant performance behind him. You know, the mere fact that Jon Moxley got any offense in, to me, actually hurt Brian a little bit. I mean, to have Brian be dominant and then finally be not tapped out and have Taz throwing the towel for him would have made more sense, in my opinion, because it would have been like he didn't quit. His manager threw it in for him. It's his moneymaker. Didn't want to risk him re-tearing that bicep again, going through physical therapy and rehab and all those things. And if Brian showed the fact that he was dominating Jon Moxley to the point where if it wasn't for Taz throwing the towel, then Jon Moxley wouldn't have won. That, to me, would have been better and more interesting going forward, especially the fact that, you know, maybe they'll see themselves again down the road. Who knows? Maybe it'll potentially happen again sooner than we think. But that would have been done wonders, in my opinion, for Brian Cage, a guy who's trying to reestablish himself after what he's done in Impact, after what he's done here. Even Jericho mentioned, even the commentary mentioned it, that he's becoming more of a powerhouse rather than doing aerial moves. He did an aerial move before, almost blew out his knee doing it. And you're like, okay, well, what is this guy's identity? And I just feel towards the end, I got lost in translation what you were trying to do with Brian Cage.
Kind of confused here because it seems like in AEW, what I've noticed, it seems like for the newbies, for the new guys from WWE, for new guys from Impact, you kind of have to earn it, right? Mm-hmm. It's like when WWE, like, oh, they have to break you down before they push you. So if you're a huge star in Ring of Honor, if you're a huge star from AEW, if you're a huge star from, you know, New Japan or whatever, it seems like WWE has to break you down so they can build you up in their eyes. And it seems to me, not that they're tearing them down or breaking them down, but it seems like they have to earn it when you're coming over. The only example that hasn't had to is FTR, because it seems like they've gotten it right away. But if you look at Brody Lee, he came in and he had to kind of like earn it because, you know, success came a little bit fast. But then when push came to shove, he lost to Jon Moxley. When
Well, look at the example.
Lance Archer, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
When Lance Archer came from New Japan, all right, this is perfect timing for him to become the TNT champion, right? Mm-hmm. With Jake the Snake, the promos, the hype, and he loses to Cody. So it seems like these guys kind of have to maybe earn it a little bit before they're given that opportunity.
Let's not forget Wardlow, too.
Wardlow as well, too.
I mean, he's brought in his powerhouse, his unstoppable force, and then loses his first competition against Cody.
So, it seems like
they're built up really well, and then towards the end, they just don't live up to the hype.
Yeah.
Now, is that because they don't live up to the hype themselves, or is it because they're being steered in that direction? In my opinion, they're being steered in that direction like you're talking about. And just I just find it weird because you just said something that's pretty interesting. You said earn it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, didn't Lance Archer earn it to get to AEW? To get to AEW, but
to be a main guy in AEW, I guess he has to earn it, or he has to, you know. I just don't mind that. I just think it's something that with, you know, the
but
pressure.
But then why build somebody up so much to break them back down again?
Well, we can ask WWE why they choose to do what they do with guys like Gallows and Anderson, Ricochet, you know, because these are guys that have had so much success on the independents and in New Japan and all over the world, and they come here to WWE. Like, dude, like when I used to watch Ricochet on New Japan or anywhere in any matches, I looked forward to it. When I see him on WWE TV, I just want to change the channel.
Yeah, it's
crazy how they do that. And my problem is that WWE like really breaks them down, like really tears them down before they build them back up. AEW seems more like, oh, you just got to earn it, you know, just a little bit, just earn it a little bit. Not going to tear you completely down, but you're here in AEW. We want to show you that this is the top brand from where you came from, so you have to earn a little bit. And Brian Cage here, I think just had to earn it a little bit more. And now it seems like he's going to be in a feud with Darby Allin, because after he threw in the towel, he recovered and he went to attack John Moxley again. And then lights go out and Darby Allin comes back out. And here's another guy, too, that has been pushed to kind of guy like Jericho. And his stock, you know, skyrocketed. He got injured from Brian Cage, comes back. Looks like the feud's going to start up between them two. Or maybe we can get Darby Allin in the title picture scene. But again, it's just something that I noticed, that these that you know, Brian Cage's and the Brody Lees and the Lance Archers, that they kind of have to, for a second, have to earn it a little bit. No problem with it. And I respect it a little bit, too, because they're in a ratings battle. That's what I'm saying. It's a battle, not a war, with NXT. And you think all of a sudden these guys are going to walk away with the championships, right? But they don't.
No, they don't. And like I said before, I don't really particularly understand why you would do that necessarily. But what you're just saying, I guess that could be logic between AEW in terms of, listen, we're going to build you up, but then towards the end, you're not going to get the outcome that people expect. Then you're going to have to work your way back up to it. Okay, I guess it's fair in the sense, but I'm like, then, you know, you kind of hurt any momentum. And we've seen a lot of momentum, in my opinion, from AEW with all these people coming in and making these debuts get side railed. And to me, it's like, okay, you don't have to necessarily side rail it. In terms of Lance Archer, or in terms of, for example, of Brian Cage's scenario, there's a way of doing it where, okay, he's not going to be in the title picture from this point on until maybe later down the road. But the way they did it didn't really showcase Brian Cage as this dominant force of this guy who you mentioned before. Does he have that it factor? He's got the look. He's got the skill. He's got the he's got muscles, you know, on parts of the body that didn't even know had muscles. But does he have that it factor? And you asked me this before we even did this recording. You asked me. I really took a few moments to think about it. And I was like, he has all the tools, but I don't really know if he has it. It factor, because the mere fact that I have to think about it, that really showcases for me, at least, that I don't feel he does. Because when other individuals, you talk about Cody, he's got it. Jericho, he's got it. Kenny, he's got it. The Young Bucks, they got it.
See, when I saw him in the ring with Moxley, it's not that I didn't think he had it. I thought he belonged. I just don't know yet, you know, if you can see that it factor yet. And it just takes time. Now, the good thing is, and this is why Jericho did a great job on it, is they kind of conflicted, is do you live to fight another day? Because you can't work, even if you win the championship and you have a torn bicep, if you win the championship, you're going to have to give it up anyways, right? You're going to have to end up forfeiting the title, because if you win, you have to defend that title, and you can't, and you're gone for 5 months, right? So I think that was a good excuse. I think it's a good excuse why Brian Cage lost. I'm sure you put the spotlight on Taz and you wonder why he did it. Will Brian Cage end up understanding?
And that's another thing that I'm getting really irritated. The spotlight is being put on Taz more than Brian Cage. We talked about this last week.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Was it Taz going one-on-one with John Moxley, or was it Brian Cage?
Yeah. I mean, again, to me, it's a good excuse as to why to lose. It's kind of smart. I didn't see it coming. It really was a page out of old school WWE when Arnold Skolin threw in the towel for Bob Backlund, right? That's the last time I remember. Well, Owen Hart and the whole Bret Hart thing, but
yeah.
It's really interesting that the spotlight's been put on Taz, and we'll find out, you know, what Taz's motive was. But you kind of heard it from JR that, you know what, Taz is the moneymaker, that Brian Cage is the moneymaker, and that he will fight to live another day. And like I said, guys, think about this. If, supposing, you know, you get your bicep torn off and you still beat John Moxley, more than likely you're going to have to give the title anyways, and you got a bum arm, and you can't work for 5 months. So,
but isn't Brian Cage the machine?
Well, I mean,
can he work without an arm? Because again, they've built him up that way. So no, I get your point, Jeff.
He's like the Aaron Judge of wrestling.
Yeah, he's like the Terminator, basically. He's a cyborg, you know. Yeah. So you rip his arm off, so he's got another one. That's why the good Lord gave you two, basically. Yeah. So yes, really confusing in terms of that outcome, in my opinion.
But it gets us talking to, though. I mean, it gets us saying, hey, this is why it's good. This is why it's bad. This is why they dropped the ball on this. This is why you have to earn it. Why these guys? And remember, I didn't say everybody. FTR has been the lone exception that I've seen so far, that they've come in here and then they've run a rough shot. They're already now, I mean, they're mixing it with the Young Bucks. They're mixing it with Lucha Bros. They have a big victory. Yes. They're going to mix it with the Young Bucks.
But what will happen? What will happen, Jeff, when they finally get that opportunity for tag team titles?
We will see. We will see if they have to earn it.
Do they suffer the same fate as a Lance Archer? do they suffer the same fate as a Brian Cage? We'll see down the road.
Yep. And again, though, but all in all, good show, man. I mean, you know, you got the tag team wrestling you want. You got the Shockers where Vicky Guerrero becomes Nyla Rose's manager. You've got anticipated main event for the championship. I mean, AEW right now does things that you want to see, you know, while spotlighting their young talent, like a Sunny Kiss, like the Jurassic Express, you know. So you see a lot of you know, you get a lot of variations, a lot of different flavors, and I think that AEW continues to do a good job, and I think they'll win again in the demographic 18 to 49. So you know, I think they're just doing it right now, and they're doing a heck of a job. So next week, you guys will see Cody defending the TNT Championship once again. Will the pressure get to Cody? Is the pressure getting to Cody? Or maybe there'll be somebody, you know, just a little bit more of competition this week than Sonny Kiss was. Adam Page takes on from the Dark Order 5. You got Evilice against Diamante. MJF is in action. That's really, I'm looking forward to seeing MJF because that's somebody we haven't really touched upon since we've done this show. So it's going to be good to, you know, touch up and see what MJF's future is going to be. Then you got the Young Bucks in action versus Butcher and the Blade. The Butcher and the Blade. Hi-ho the Mario, the Butcher and the Blade, which honestly, I don't get Butcher and the Blade, but, you know, any Young Bucks match, I'm looking forward to watching. And then Jurassic Express take on the team of Jack Hagar and Le Champion, Chris Jericho, the man. So lots of great stuff coming up next week. So looking forward to discussing that. But man, Trendsetter, that's 2 weeks in a row now doing the AEW Dynamite recap Fight for the Fallen, man. Yes. So exciting to do this and have a chance to recap AEW for you guys. And again, we want you to be interactive. We want to hear from you guys. So follow us on High Spot Podcast, all our social media on the IG and the Twitter, and let's debate. Let's interact with one another, man. Looking forward to hearing from you, the fans.
Yes, and don't forget to also catch us on YouTube as well. Give us a like, thumbs up, and subscribe to our YouTube channel as well, High Spot Podcast, all one word. We would greatly appreciate your feedback and your support, which we always do. I mean, you've supported us enough to make this now two shows. Yeah. On the Unofficial WWE Podcast.
Hey, yo, we are taking over. What other show could we take over, Trendsetter? Maybe we could take over Matt's Raw Reviews if he maybe changes my name from Jeff to Greg.
Well, if we do, it would be called Mark now.
Yeah, exactly. We can maybe take over the Wrestling Nostalgia Show or the Saturday Night Week in Review. But you know what? We'll let Mary Grader, Ashley Mann, Anthony DeMarco work on that one with everybody. And we can do the AEW Review. And who knows? Maybe the NXT Review's next, Zach Smith, because we're here. And, you know, you don't know where we're going to strike. And, of course, we do the SmackDown Review, the Jersey Wrecking Crew, this coming Saturday. So, look, so much to look forward to, Trendsetter, man. Like, not enough time. And I'm definitely going to take a nap now.
Not enough time, but we definitely know same time next week, guys, as you'll listen to another episode of the AEW Dynamite Recap Show with the Jersey Wrecking Crew. For my tag team partner, Jeff Moore, and I am the Trendsetter, Brian Berger. Thank you guys so much for listening to this week's episode. We will catch you again next week. Check us out on the High Spot Podcast again, and don't forget, if you haven't figured it out by episode 2, then you're never gonna figure it out.
You never will.
But
never
we do will. It for one reason, yep. And we do it for you,
the crew. Wash your hands,
wash
people.
Your hands.
Wash those hands.